All right, so this afternoon's workshop right now is called Five Cries of the Asian American Christian Young Adults. And our speaker is Dr. Tim Tsang, and he's a friend of mine. And I believe his bio is in the handbook. Tim is originally from, I don't want to spoil it for our group. He's from somewhere else, not California. But his father was a pastor, so he's a pastor's kid. He grew up in the Chinese church himself. He's taught in different seminaries and colleges, I believe about four of them. He started an organization that helped educate churches and Christians. It's called Isaac. He's currently the English pastor at Canaan Taiwanese Christian Church, just really close to our church in Milpitas. Is right off the 237. So he's very familiar with the Chinese church. What I appreciate about Pastor Tim is he brings to us experience of being a Christian for a long time and also being in the Chinese church for a long time. And he has a passion for equipping and helping really Asian American Christians understand what it means to be Chinese or be Asian American in the United States and what it means to be a Christian together. So the issues involving that. And I've known Tim for a handful of years, and I know him as a humble person, a person who loves God and who loves to educate. And he brings that passion and that structure, that teaching background to us. And it's great to have him here with us to share from his experience and help us in this regard. So help me welcome Timothy Tsang.
Thank you very much, Eugene, for that wonderful introduction. It is so good to be Eugene's friend. And when I was in the middle of looking for my next calling, because at the time, this was about 3 years ago, I was ready to step away from Isaac as the executive director and turn it over to other people. I asked Eugene about, well, what's it like to go back to being a pastor? And he gave me some very, very good advice. And I'm so grateful for that, because if it wasn't for my meeting with him, I don't know if I would have wound up going back to Canaan, to the church where I'm at now, where I am really very happy. I enjoy being a pastor. I enjoy relating to people. One of the things that I didn't do much when I was leading a nonprofit or a teacher was to actually have opportunities to hear from people's concerns and their lives. And it's just wonderful to being a pastor to be able to be right there where people are in need of consoling or encouragement. And being a pastor is a really exciting experience. Plus, I don't have to lecture. I can just preach every Sunday. Which actually is harder for me, but that's another story. I'm so glad that you've invited me to come and give this one of two workshops. This one I've done before, so some of you may be familiar with, but it's based upon some concerns that I'm sure that all of us share about what's going to happen to our children or the next generation. What's happening right now with young adults who come from churches like ours? I'm sure you're aware of Helen Lee and her, I don't, maybe not, but about maybe 15 years ago, she wrote an article in Christianity Today called The Silent Exodus. And that article was basically looking at the phenomenon of young people leaving their Asian ethnic churches. And that has continued today. And that article caused Logos Seminary to be so alarmed that they actually tried to start an Asian American ministry program to do something to retain their young people. But it has been very hard. They have done so much, and I really admire their effort. But I think this crisis of helping to keep our young adults within our churches will continue. So this this presentation and workshop is designed to help us at least get into the hearts and minds of some young adults, not everyone. And hopefully by looking at them, we might have an opportunity to rethink how we might do ministry. One of the things I really am enjoying about being at my church is that we are experimenting. We're trying different ways to reconnect with our young adults, with our youth, so that perhaps the next generation, we won't see the same level of attrition. Maybe the people will come back and say, this is actually a really cool church. This is where I belong. And that's my prayer and hope. And for me personally, I'm committed to churches like ours, even though you can tell that I'm like a ABC, even though I can speak a little Chinese, probably not as well as Eugene and Priscilla, but I can speak a little bit. And most of my energy, I spend a lot of time outside the Chinese church. I have a lot of fun within or outside the Chinese church. It doesn't matter. But I feel committed to, instead of trying to start yet another Asian American or multi-ethnic church or be part of that, I really believe that God has a place for ethnic churches like Chinese and Korean and other Vietnamese churches. So my purpose in doing this is to provide a way to give us encouragement and support. And maybe it's not so encouraging, but at least some ways of thinking through. So I invite you to, none of what I'm sharing is absolute. It's still, there are all more questions than anything else, but it's designed to give us a chance to think together, because only when we put our hearts and our minds together can we actually dream and maybe create a ministry or a church where young adults can feel like they belong. And I hope that you share that with me as well. So let's begin with a word of prayer. We're so grateful to you, God, for this Thanksgiving Day, for the wonderful tradition that this church has of gathering in retreat every single time there's a Thanksgiving. Whereas other churches may leave Thanksgiving for families to fend on their own, this church has chosen to collectively bring thanks to you on this wonderful weekend. Thank you for the beautiful weather we've had today, for the safety and the protection that you've provided for us, for the fellowship that you've given to us, and for the love that is present here. I pray that you will continue to watch over us the rest of this retreat. Help us to reach across to people who don't speak the same language we do, who think differently, and just so that we can learn how to appreciate the beautiful diversity of people that are present in this church that you have gifted us with. Now, as we turn our attention to this presentation, I ask that you give all of us patience and wisdom as we seek to seek your mind and find some creative ways to addressing a ministry concern that we all share. I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, well, let's see. How do we begin? Well, one of the things that those of you who are, let's say, Asian American young adults, that is those of you who were raised in America and have had experience just acculturating to American culture, and this is a question I asked a number of Asian American young adults. And these are some of the responses I got from my last time I did the workshop, okay? And this is what some people said. One concern that Asian American young adults meet, the first one that came up was getting married, right? Another one is, how do I get a high-paying job as opposed to an ordinary, like a flipping burgers at McDonald's? How can I get freedom from my home? I'm feeling like I have to, and my two sons are at home with me right now, even though they're in college. What about getting a college diploma? I don't really know where that came from, but someone brought that up. Student loans. How do I pay off my student loans? How do I deal with competition with other Asian Americans? We tend to always be competing with each other for the same few positions at Stanford or Ivy League schools. How can I help my grandparents who are getting older? I don't have enough time to do my own thing and still serve in the church. So that's what someone complained about that. How do I get a house, especially in the Bay Area? How can I fulfill my parents' expectations? And how do I find my own identity so I can know who I am? So are these familiar questions? I think they're familiar, but they're not only for Asian American young adults. I think almost every young adult faces very similar questions. Can you think of other issues in addition to these that come up? You can just shout from the audience. Did I cover it all? This is all that young adults care about? Yeah. I know there's a very big space here. Okay. We'll keep thinking about it. So let me read you a Bible passage that I think might help us think about CCIC North Valley. The parable of the soils. I know most of the times this is called the parable of the sower, but I want to call it the parable of the soils because that's really what it is about. And it comes from Luke chapter 8. This is Jesus teaching his disciples. A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path. It was trampled on. and the birds ate it up. Some fell on rocky ground, and when it came up, the plants withered because they had no moisture. Other seeds fell upon among the thorns, which grew up with it and choked the plants. Oops, I went too fast. Okay. Still other seed fell on good soil. It came up and yielded a crop 100 times more than it was sown. So this very familiar passage raises the question, what does good soil for Asian American young adult Christians look like? And I have no answers right here for you. I'm asking you to think about it, because if we pay attention to the condition of the soil of our church, it not just for Asian Americans, but for anyone, it will help us understand how best to cultivate fruit and growth among our membership, among each other. Okay, so think about those questions. What are the issues that young adults look interested in? And what does a good soil for young adult Christians look like? So let me now move on to the research that I've been looking at. This research is rapidly getting out of date. So much of what came about before the big recession. So there's a need again for new research of young adults. And there have been quite a few scholars, sociologists in particular, who have been examining the next generation of young adults, or this emerging generation. And the terms that they've been using are Generation Next, Millennials, or Emerging Adults. These are folks in their early to mid-20s. By the time this research was done that I'm sharing with you, these folks are reaching their 30s. So they're actually moving into upper 20, early 30s. So even though it's a little bit out of date, I still think it has a lot of relevance, because there are other research that I didn't have a chance to incorporate here that are showing that the next generation of young adults are having these types of concerns and even more intensified, especially around the religious faith. Fewer and fewer white American young adults are going to church. So if you look at the overall demographics, the racial minority young adults are still more interested in church than the white ones. So there's in the white churches, there's a huger, bigger crisis than for us. There's a place they can go, I would recommend. It's called changingseed.org. It's a collection of all the research that I've been using. Although the focus is on the mainstream, largely white population, there's a lot of good information there that can help us analyze our situation. So that's what I'd like for you to just consider as you get a chance to, when you have an opportunity in the future. Before I made this presentation, I did a quick online survey. It was not a very scientific one, but it was quick. I offered a $25 gift certificate for Jamba Juice, and 20 people responded. So I was very surprised. Maybe young adults don't like Jamba Juice anymore. But in any case, maybe I didn't have a big enough megaphone or didn't announce it. But here are some of the thoughts that people have come up with, some of the young adults have shared about their experience in their church. My voice and opinion does not count. I need to be a confident person at work and standing up for myself, so I won't let people treat me like I'm a teenager, even though I look young, since I look young. And a lot of Asian Americans look young. I don't know if they really look young or it's just social, cultural perceptions. Others have said, the church leaders have very low expectations of our young adults, and therefore the young adults have been increasingly marginalized. They have a tendency to be marginalized. And one young adult who's actually a youth pastor said, I want the freedom to be listened to, really listened to, about my concerns, about my ministry and my future by caring Christian leaders. I don't think it's anybody we know here, but that was a concern. So let me just summarize these five cries that I'm putting together are really, they're not scientific either. I'm just raising them because they tend to be questions that I wanted to us to engage in based on looking at the data and talking to a lot of young people. So here they are. I'll just read them out to you. When will I grow up? Can I embrace my race? Am I loved? Am I being fed at my church? And am I getting the best value? Okay, five cries of Asian American young adults that I think are pretty can be found in many other settings, not just Asian American settings, but particularly for Asian American young adults. And if I know this large setting does not encourage much interaction, but if you really have a question or something you don't agree with or something you want to say amen to, Pretend that you are a black church and just shout it out, okay? I don't really mind, and I will stop for you to allow the Holy Spirit to lead you. If you have to roll on the ground because you're empowered by the Holy Spirit, go for it, okay? That would make this presentation more fun, actually. Okay, the first question. When do I grow up? And this is the part I always get. I spend a lot of time on this, and I shouldn't. Okay, I'll try my best to go through this quickly. One of the quotes from the survey was that, "I feel stuck. My generation is lost or passed over." So many Asian American young adults, and I can see this even in my church, don't know how to act like adults. They feel like everyone looks at them and they look like they're the kids and they don't know how to take responsibility or they don't choose to. So the big question is that they ask is, when will I be treated like an adult? When will I be considered an adult? And part of the reason for this, and again, this is the out-of-date data, is that many young adults today grow up in a different kind of economy than, let's say, when I was a teenager in my 20s. We live in an economy today which is even worse than this data, where is someone entitled the risk economy, an economy where no one can be assured of a job that will last forever. So in fact, according to Robert Withnow, he labels the average Americans between 18 and 35, he calls them tinkerers because within the 17-year span, many Americans have held 7 or 8 jobs. And I did the informal survey with some Asian Americans too. I said, how many of you have had only 1 or 2 jobs? These are folks in their mid to late 20s. And most of them have had like 3 or 4 jobs already. So that's another reality. And the workplace expectations have changed too. So no longer do companies hire you for life. Companies no longer want to train people. They're always looking for someone who already has the expertise. So that makes it very challenging for young adults because, once you get out of college, you don't have experience. How can you get the experience you need to latch onto a job that can be more secure? And furthermore, the benefits have been diminished, and it's just very difficult to find a company where the company will actually provide more loyalty to you as a worker. Maybe the exception is Silicon Valley, where some of the high tech companies are still pretty good at this. But overall, that's changing. Then among Asian Americans, there's a concern, as I alluded to before, that children are always children forever. So I know this church that I used to be a member of where this is an old historic Chinese church, and they've been around for 160 years. Okay, this is an old church, so you can probably guess which one it is. And in that church, there is actually a fellowship group called the Oyas, which I think stands for young adults. And the average age of that group is 60, 70. Because for the people who are in their 80s and 90s, they're still the kids. So that's why in some churches that just never ends. And that could be our culture, but whatever the case is, it's one of the realities that I think that we face. We as Asian Americans, as Chinese Americans, we tend to want things to stay in their place. Like the elder must be respected by the junior and we bring that into our community life. And sometimes it for young adults, it feels stifling. Okay, so, and another sociological fact that's not only for Asian Americans is that young adults in America take longer now to be considered adults. And the reason you can define adulthood by getting married, getting a stable job, and having kids, right? That's the way most people define adulthood. In the 1970s, many Americans already were married by 22, 23, 24. Today, they wait until they're in their 30s to get married and then to have children. Is that something you're seeing in your church, by the way? Is that something happening? But that seems to be pretty widespread, even with Asian Americans. Some of the young adults in my church, for example, instead of getting married, they decided to go for 2 or 3 master's degrees, right? And the reason for that is because they just don't feel secure. They feel like they need more and more equipping before they can get a good job. And it just takes them forever to latch on to somebody and get married, for goodness sake, right? So as a result, it takes a long time for even American adults to be treated as adults by that criteria. And today there are ways in which, I don't want to go through this, but there are different ways that young adults try to get to move toward adulthood, especially in light of the difficult economy. They sometimes do a teamwork strategy where they hang out with other peers, they rent a room together, they share an apartment, and they try to build their lives as singles, and then they eventually gradually split up and find their way with their spouses and get married. The flying solo are those who basically are trying to do it by themselves. These are the ones who are usually more wealthy. And then there's the not equipped, those who don't know what to do. So they come home and they play video games. So, again, this survey is out of date, but one third. That's what they were estimating of the young adults population. Now, how does this impact those of us who are Asian Americans? Well, there is that silent exodus phenomenon of leaving the Asian church because the Asian church is viewed as the church of my youth, the church where I'm a kid. And if I want to be an adult, it's probably better to get out of the church that I associate with my childhood and where I'm still viewed as a kid. Others who stay in the church tend to feel a little bit like, oh, well, I'm just here and do whatever I can. A perpetual dependency. And I've seen that in some of our Asian American young adults who are just not enthusiastic. They don't do much. They just sit there. I can't get them to do anything. So it's like, come on, here's an opportunity to do a ministry. And they just want to sit there and don't want to do anything. The clearest example is like this. We take turns serving lunch. Every Asian church has lunch, right? So it was the English adults' turn to serve lunch in the month of November. The only people who signed up were the couples with kids. All the singles didn't even bother. So there's some anger now. There people are fighting each other. But anyway, that's why I'm here. I'm avoiding them. But that's one of those things that we struggle with. Okay. Second question. Can I embrace my race? Oh, I forgot this was being recorded. Don't give this to my folks at Canaan, okay? I didn't say anything too bad, I hope. Okay. Now this has to do with more of how young adults relate to the outside North American society. Because when you get outside of your comfortable family and the church, the Asian church, then everyone recognizes that you're different. You're Asian. You don't look like a typical white American, right? So, and even black Americans, and to some degree, are viewed as more like Americans, although recently I'm not sure about that. But nevertheless, even today, despite the fact that the American demographic is changing rapidly, the norm of who an American is still a white person. So Asians have to go out there and deal with that. So one person said in an online survey, I'm not fitting in with white culture, and for my immigrant friends, I'm not being Chinese enough. So there's this sense, I don't know where I belong. Okay, and I really know how this feels, because I remember when my kids were in middle school, and there are two middle schools in Castro Valley have their annual flag football contests, right? The two teams send their teams out. I went to that football game with my sons. I was, I think, out of the entire crowd of maybe 3,000 people, I might have been one of four or five Asian families. And even though our schools were like 30-40% Asian, only that few families came out to the football game. And that just goes to show, there's certain places where Asians don't go, and that's one of them. Okay, so how do I fit in? I didn't feel like I fit in at all. But it was kind of hard because I also got some funny looks. But that's a different story. All right. So for a lot of Asian Americans, the question is, how do I deal with the fact that I can't change my appearance? I don't look like a white person, but I'm always viewed differently. Just like my baby brother used to tell me, came home one day from school. He says, "How do people know I'm Chinese? I didn't tell them." So those are things you can't do anything about, right? So the problem here is that many Asian American young adults, instead of looking more holistically at the problem, they tend to ignore it, or they tend to try to pretend it doesn't bother them. But I want to just say here that one of the problems is that in America, even though it's changing, what I call the race script, the way we define who we are, is just like if you were writing a play or a movie, someone writes the movie, writes the parts, and everyone has to play their role. In American society, it's kind of like that. We're like a big, giant Broadway show, and everybody has a different role. And an Asian American person has a special role. He's a nerd. He's a geek or whatever. He's a kung fu master. She's a exotic person. So these race scripts are the problem. Even if I'm not those stereotypical Asian, I will still be perceived that way. Now, the Bay Area is different, but it's not that different in certain parts of the Bay Area, like up here in this part of the Bay Area. Never mind. Okay, so what's happening here, the race script in America is still, even though I hope it's changing, if it ain't white, it ain't right. So the norm is whiteness. And hopefully our young adults in the next generation are moving into a society where that's not the norm anymore. But for now, I still think it's very strong. And then there's this, you hear this part from white man's multiculturalism from a lot of evangelical churches who all want to become multicultural all of a sudden because they're losing their young white people. So now they want to bring Asians into the church. And this is what's happening in the South Bay. I know several formerly white churches that are working so hard. They hire Asian pastors so they can bring Asians into the church. But the problem here is really that embedded in a lot of these thinking is the idea that this multiculturalism is defined by white people. Okay? White people say, you come to my church. And it doesn't become the other way around. Like, let's say, come on, let's get white people to come to CCIC. Right? And I've seen this in my church too. There's sometimes spouses or boyfriends of some of the Asian girls in our church. They come, they feel very, very uncomfortable. Even though we all speak English, we all can communicate with them, but there's a sense that they don't feel comfortable unless they're in a norm. And that's something that hopefully will change. But until that does, this is what we're facing, that even in evangelical churches, what's defined as multicultural really means the white person is still in charge. And I think that that's a problem that still persists. And then there's a theological problem where, a lot of us go to, which is called Gnosticism. And Gnostic thinking, it says that the body doesn't matter. My face, my race doesn't matter. All that matters is that I'm one with Jesus Christ. Okay? So this type of thinking wants to dismiss anything that has to do with our physical feature. So these are the people who will say, why don't we just all be Christians and don't talk about our race or ethnicity? Okay, let's just all be one in Christ. And when that happens, especially when white people say that, it is very hard for anyone else to say, well, look, my experience is different. You're treating me a certain way because there's no longer any room to talk about the racial differences. So that is another problem that really affects a lot of our younger people, because they go into a society where these are accepted as the norm. And then if you want to talk about being Asian American, there's no place to talk about it. You just can't talk about it. It's too uncomfortable. It makes people uncomfortable. It makes yourself uncomfortable. So I would say that the problem is not with us. Is with the way our society in America constructs our roles. And we have to find a way to change that. And this is where I hope that part of what I hope I can be part of in our Asian churches is to help to write a new script for America. And it's changing. The recent elections, if you saw the exit polls, 75% of the Asian Americans voted for Obama. 95% of the African Americans voted for Obama, and 72% of the Latinos voted for Obama. So apparently, there's a new script going on, and the Republicans are all going nuts because they're saying, "Oh no, we're just white men." So, and also the majority of women went for Obama. So something new is happening. Okay, so hopefully we can be part of writing a new script, and that's my hope, and why I'm also still serving in a Chinese church. I think I can do that best here. Okay, so I would say here that there's two kinds of ways that our churches can help to our young adults to deal with their race. One is to always remember that part of our mission is to empower ourselves and our young people to represent who we are as Asian Americans. God made us Asian American, or God created that in us, so therefore we should not deny it, we shouldn't be ashamed of it, but we should try to represent it in as Christ-like a manner as possible. And the word representation can be used in two ways. It can mean political participation, so that if you happen to be in a church that's multicultural, but there are no white leaders, there are no non-white leaders, you can try to advocate for more Asian presence there. Or making culture, which is making like a representation as a culture, something that represents who we are. So when we like teach Sunday school or do something with our church, we don't just have to use David C. Cook and materials that are produced for us by people who are not as sensitive to us. Like, let me just give you an example. Do you do Operation Christmas Child? Okay, do you like that video promotional? You like it, right? It's not bad. You care for the poor people, poor children. But if you look at the way that promotion is done, all the people who are needy are people who are not white. All these poor kids who are brown and some maybe Asian. And all the people who are helping them, who are Christians, are white. So what do we have? What choice do we have? We want to participate in Operation Christmas Child, but they give us this material that makes me feel like, gee, you know, anyway, I don't want to sound like I'm bitter or upset, but I think that one of the things we can do is to try to do things to let people know that we want to show the world a different picture of what it means to be Christian. It's not just about white people helping the poor yellow people and brown people and black people. We have to change that. So someone's got to go and talk to Franklin Graham and say, hey, that's, you should know better. Your father knew better. You know, something like that. You know, so making culture is part of that, trying to tell people that this is a new way of looking at our reality. And then I also hope that this means that some of the Asian American leaders like Francis Chan and others will not just simply talk about colorblind gospel, but they will go beyond that and start talking about, well, for Francis Chan, what does it mean for him to grow up as a Chinese American? And not just talk about how short he is. He needs to learn, just like a lot of other Asian American leaders have. My friend Ken Fong went through this himself. It's easy to get an audience with a wider population if you don't ever talk about your Asian American identity, or if you dismiss it or make fun of it. But once you start talking about it, you lose the opportunity to speak. So we need leaders like Francis Chan and others who will be very serious about talking about the Asian American experience. So that's another way our young adults, if they hear models and examples of people talking very truthfully about their experience as Asian Americans, I think that would help change the script and help encourage our young adults to more openly embrace who they are. Otherwise, I think we're going to continue to see generations of young adults just forgetting and not even caring about their culture and their identity. And then after they get older, they feel like something is lost. And that's another problem that I think is a major spiritual crisis. Okay, I spent too much time on that. Third cry, am I loved? And this one is really hard. I'm going to talk about this in two ways. One is, how can I find a Christian mate? The Australian version, mate. No, that wouldn't work. The Australian mate is just a friend, right? How do I find a Christian girlfriend or boyfriend, husband or wife? And the thing is that for Asian Americans compared to white Americans, as Asian Americans get older, their ability to make friends with non-Asians decreases. That's another finding. As white people get older, they make more friends with non-white people. So, given that trend, we will probably see more interracial marriage, especially between white and Asian. But among maybe a lot of Asian American men, that may not be true. But it leads to all kinds of issues around how do we address this question of finding a spouse. And I think this is a very important one because in my church, we have this situation where our young adults are primarily men. I think we have a handful of girls, young adult women, that is. And whenever new visitors come by, especially guys, when they come to visit our church, you know, they're coming to hear the message of the gospel, I'm sure. But they're also checking around and seeing, are there enough sisters here? And the answer is no. So they leave. So they might go to your church because you might have more sisters. So, but I don't know whether this is just Silicon Valley phenomenon, but in our church, that's something that we're sort of wrestling with because we just don't have enough sisters who want to hang out with us. And so this whole question of finding a mate, I think is something that we churches need to take seriously. We can't, I'm not talking about going back to the old, you know, bargaining and arranged marriage. I'm not talking about that. But I have found, like, for it was a real shock for me that my first week as a pastor, right, this is after, 15 years of being a seminary professor, my first week as a pastor, the first ministry crisis I had to deal with is helping somebody find a girlfriend. The mom comes to me and takes me off, treats me for a lavish lunch. She speaks Taiwanese. I can't understand what she's talking about. Except for one thing. I need you to find a wife for my 38-year-old son. So this is reality. But this is also true for the wider society because for the first time in American history, the majority of emergents are people in their between 18 and 29 are single. Okay, and not married with children. The majority are no longer surrounded by people who have families. So what this means is that we have got to really think about, I'm sorry, I keep going back and forth, how to change our model of ministry, not just the American church as a whole, but I think our Asian American churches too. We're still doing our ministries based on family ministries that are still based on the 50s, which is very simple, nuclear family, husband, wife, and 2.5 kids and a dog. Okay, in a Chevrolet. Oh no, we all drive Japanese models. I'm sorry, but whatever the case may be, that motto is very, very helpful for people who are like myself, who got married early and have children. But there are many singles, Asian Americans, and young adults who don't have that same experience. So we just have to be aware of how to embrace them, help them find love, and also love them as well. And within our churches, and I'll talk more about this in tomorrow's workshop. Can we find ways to have a diversity of expressions of love? Many of our Asian ways of expressing love are really centered around doing, right, and serving. Isn't that true? Like my wife, who's from Hong Kong, is more Asian than I am. She was raised in a more traditional Cantonese family. And she doesn't feel comfortable talking about love. She doesn't come to me and say, "Oh, Tim, I love you. You make me feel like I'm floating in space. You turn me on," and none of that stuff. I made dinner, so that's my love. So I understand. I mean, that's not true for all Asian Americans, more Asians, but there are different ways of expressing love, and I think that one of the things we should try to figure out is how do we provide ways for different personalities to experience and express love within our church, so that young adults who tend to want to embrace and hug each other and kiss each other in front of people, instead of going, you know, and hopefully we can sort of say, "Oh, they're just young people." You know, it's just somehow find a way to learn to provide space for young adults who may behave differently. All right, that's the third question. Fourth one, and it gets more difficult now. Am I being fed at my church? This is where it gets makes me feel very hurt, because the answer is probably not. And here's their survey. Here's a young adult who is very dedicated, and she serves in church. She says, "I'm expected to teach the children and the youth, but I'm not being fed spiritually. So I'm not getting spiritual food." And what happens there is that you have a situation where many of our young adults who are single, who obviously have more time, and they do, are free. They can teach the kids. They can teach the youth. And I think we tend to always want them to help out because, you know, it's good that they can serve and grow in that way. But many of them have felt that they're doing so much of that, that they're not personally getting time to grow spiritually or to be nourished. And there are different reasons for that. I'll share more about that, but I can give you one example. We have a young adult who just got back from college about a year ago, and he's a really great guy. He went to the University of Michigan and was very involved with the InterVarsity Fellowship there. When he came back, we all, you know, welcomed him, and then within a few months, he got assigned three things: youth, children, and what's the third one? I think I forgot the third one, but then we also nominated him to be a deacon. So this guy says to me, "Oh my goodness, I'm only back for a few months and now I'm getting assigned all these responsibilities." And so I told, I think we're experimenting with how to treat our young adults, I said to him, "Arthur, okay, I know that I nominated you to be a deacon, but I also know you have a lot of things to do. So this, don't worry about that. This just, don't do that. Just focus on one or two things and just do those things. And don't say yes to anything else, because he doesn't want to say no." So anyway, that's another example of how sometimes we see the best and brightest young adult and we put him to work right away. And maybe that's not the best solution. And in fact, this is what another person said. The immigrant Asians are too performance and obligation oriented. Where is the grace and where is the beef? And that has to do with the sense that whenever they hear messages, the sermons are always about do this, work harder, hard, jayo. That's all. The messages are always about make yourself even better, you know, and work to the best, because it's for the community. The community needs you, and it's true. We do need hard workers. We do need detailed people. But the problem is that many of our young adults feel that when they hear that kind of message from the pulpit, which I'm also guilty of preaching, by the way, they feel like, "Wow, how can I grow spiritually when all I'm being told is to work? Okay, I have to work at work. I have to work with my relationships at home. And I have to work at church. Nothing but work. So that's a big concern. So this other thing has to do with moralistic therapeutic deism. That's just a big terminology, which means that young adults spiritually are not as attuned to just working in service. So that's why you might feel that some of our young adults are not as interested in mission or service. It's because they have in general been taught that To be spiritual means to feel good about yourself, to working on your own personal spiritual nourishment and development, cultivating your personal life. How do I use my time wisely? How do I find balance between my social life? And so those are the kind of questions they have. How do I feel close to God? Those are very different kinds of questions than maybe the previous generation, where it's not a matter of how close am I to God, but how can I just be in this family and enjoy it and build it up? But for a lot of young people, they're really very concerned about that question. How do I feel like I'm close to God? And then the answer that I give is I don't really know how to make you feel like you're close to God. Maybe I can make the worship experience even more like a special spiritual experience. Turn off all the lights. Tell everyone to close their eyes and imagine that they're in space, and I don't know. There are all kinds of things we can try, but it's very, very hard because it's a very different kind of reaction. So that therapeutic deism is really something that I think is affecting a lot of our young people. So when they come back, they tend to want that kind of spirituality. So as a result, many young adults reject obligation, and they focus on trying to make their spiritual practice and everyone else fit what they want. And this is especially true for white young adults. I taught at University of San Francisco for an adjunct class, and whenever we talk about spirituality, all they talked about was, oh, I want to go to a Zen Buddhist monastery. I want to go and learn yoga and practice that all my own person, to make me feel better about myself. And they're not concerned about community. It's spirituality is about me. And I think that this is affecting a lot of our Asian American young adults too. And I don't say this as a positive thing. I think this is not necessarily a positive development, but it's something to be aware of. And in fact, the data has shown itself. And I'm going to skip through this because it's already 5:30. Okay. So today, more than any other generation, fewer and fewer Americans as a whole are attending church, but they still call themselves spiritual people. They don't want to be known as unspiritual. They're not atheists. They're not ungodly, wicked, evil. But they want to be known as a person who's moral, personally spiritual, but as long as I don't have to go to church. Okay, and that's the trend in America. So these are more data, which I can share with you later. So I don't know if you heard about this, but this is what Christian sociologists are alarmed about, is that we are entering an age where people want to be spiritual but not religious, which means they don't want to be part of a community. Okay, so are we being fed at church? Are young adults being fed at church? Those are some questions about feeding young adults. Another issue around feeding young adults at church is, who feeds me? Who do young adults today get fed by? Asian or non-Asian leaders, and why? Okay, with the exception of Francis Chan, and maybe Ken Fong and maybe David Gibbons, I really don't know of too many other Asian American speaker leader who actually has a kind of place where they can teach and encourage and young adults. So what happened there? Why is it that they don't listen to Asian American leaders? Does Asian American history and experience feed me? This relates to the other question about embracing my race. How come they don't pay attention? If you ask at Fuller Seminary, for example, they're trying to start an Asian American ministry track, right? And in the past, they've experimented by offering courses in Asian American ministry, Asian American theology. No Asian American students went to those classes. So what's happening is that even those who are going into ministry are not interested in understanding anything about their own themselves. So something is going on. There's something that I think we need to look at. And then, can our immigrant churches offer something that helps them address the more therapeutic approach to spirituality or more substantive theology? Because that substantive theology question is a big one. I know that some of you may or may not be aware of this, but there's this a trend of young people who come up from UCLA who went to John MacArthur's church. Are you familiar with John MacArthur and his ministry? Okay. I'm not saying anything negative about John MacArthur. I'm just talking about his disciples. And what they've been doing is that they want substantive theology. They don't want to just hear about doing service in church. They want to know, what does the Bible teach? How can I know for sure that this is salvation? What about the meaning of these deep terminologies like grace and justification, predestination? They want to know substantive theology. They want to be sure about their salvation, but they're not getting that in a lot of our Asian churches. So they come and they get very dissatisfied, and some of them have actually been pretty disruptive. So I don't want to say anything too negative, but I do think that there's a hunger for substantive thinking and theology that I think our Asian churches need to be ready to provide. Hopefully not MacArthur's stuff, but hopefully something that's substantive that will help them. Okay, so those are some big questions about how we take care of our young Asian American adults. Last question, and after I share this, I think we'll have a chance for some question and answers if we can do it. The third question is, am I getting best value? And this is a question which is, to me, is the most problematic question. It's the one that not just Asian Americans, but all people today in America have to deal with, especially Christians, because we tend to turn our faith into a consumer market. And let me just give you a quiz. Of these churches, right, these churches in which, what percentage of these churches are Asians who left Asian American churches? Okay. Some of them are Bay Area, but let me start with one that's not a Bay Area church. Redeemer Presbyterian Church, Tim Keller's church in New York City. Oh, can anyone guess what's the percentage of Asian Americans in that church? Some people tell me it's more than 50% now. Okay. And most of the Asian Americans who go to his church are people who were burned out by the Chinese and Korean churches in the Bay Area, are people who just wanted to be at a church that they thought was more cool than the ethnic churches. Okay? These are young people who are advancing in society, doing very well, because everyone who goes to Redeemer tends to be people who do very well. They're cultured. They go out, they don't just watch Broadway shows, they watch off-Broadway shows. You know, these are folks who read the New York Times and the New York, not the New Yorker, maybe the New Yorker, the New York Review of Books. These are young people who are smart, educated, and very well off. And they go to a church like that. And here in San Francisco, the church that's sort of a church plant of Redeemers called City Church, same phenomenon. I checked in and I heard that there's about 30 to 40%, maybe more, Asian Americans there. Okay. Abundant Life Christian Fellowship, even though they've had some troubles the last few years, I heard that at least one-tenth of this church is Asian American. And First Presbyterian Berkeley has had a long history of engaging Asian Americans. Forget about Redeemer, but if you look at City Church, Abundant Life, First Press, and maybe a couple of other larger churches in Silicon Valley, if you just added all the Asian Americans in those churches, they would outnumber all the Asian Americans in our churches. There are 300 Chinese churches in America, in the Bay Area. Only a handful of them have English ministries. And if you add up all the numbers of people in English ministries, they will not equal this total. And I think the same can be almost said about the Korean churches too. Korean churches are in the same boat. So all of our churches are finding those Christians, those young people who grow up in our churches and leave and stay Christian, they're going to these other churches. Okay, and that's okay. I don't think it's wrong, but I do think it reflects something about why they're doing that we need to unpack a little bit. And I think that my guide is Lisa Park. She wrote a book called Consuming Citizenship, where she analyzes the life stories of Asian immigrant children. And these are Asian immigrants who are wealthy, well-educated, the ones who work in Silicon Valley or high-tech. Their children are not poor. Their children have almost everything that they can want. But yet, the way they live is to talk about things they have and buy all the time. They're the ones who have the latest smartphone. They're the ones who have the most up-to-date stuff. And they have no worry about, you know, anything because their parents give them everything. And then they have this practice of buying things. They're very consumer-minded. And some of that might be just our Asian culture, but there's a tendency for the second generation of folks to be even more materialistic and even more consumer-oriented. And Park asked the question, why do they have to do that? Why do they need to show off that they have all this stuff? And why do they have to remind other people? And her answer is that they do this to prove to their non-Asian friends that they are Americans. Because I'm not a poor person. I'm not an illegal immigrant. I can spend money and act just like a white person who has money. And that's how I prove my citizenship. So they call that social, she calls it social citizenship through consumption. And I'm going to ask the question, do we Asian American Christians do the same thing? Do we want to tell everyone that we're real, legitimate Christians by not being in an Asian American church, by being in the cool church? Is that part of our motivation? And I think it's there, because I actually have a couple in my church who came to our church very excited initially, but then they left. And they left because they felt like our church didn't provide the things they wanted. They wanted better child care. They wanted to have messages that speak to them directly. They wanted to have all these things that are convenient that you can get at a big church in Pleasanton. So that's what they wound up doing. And they know. I told them that this could be a reflection of consumerism, but they know. But they say, well, I have a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old. It's very hard for me to not think this way. So I said to them, bless you. You just go and, wait till your children grow older, because maybe at that point you're ready to think about how you make your choices. But in the meantime, I would say that most of us feel the same way, that we want to go to the place where we can be served the best. And maybe this is what a lot of our Asian American young people are doing, that we're trying to prove to everyone that we're real good Christians by being in the real cool churches. Like at City Church, they have seminars about how theology and culture interact. They have these workshops where they bring in big name theologians. And even I would be interested in going to those things. Like Norm Wright goes and preaches and lectures. They get seminary professors and scholars. And I can't imagine any of our Chinese churches doing that. But why do they go? Because those are great places to get resourced. So consumers, they shop, they buy, they use. And I don't want to get into the presidential elections that they're takers and not makers. Okay, let's don't get there, no there. But there's a tendency for many of our young people to enjoy being consumers more than servers. Okay. So, is it possible that this is what it means to be a model minority Christian, where you can have people serve you rather than serving others? Just as some critical questions to ask our fellow young adults. And finally, why do they behave this way? Is it, and this is the question I want to ask to those of us who are parents, including myself. Do we parents have something to do with creating this consumer-oriented type of personality? Because do we always work on trying to get them to the best high school, the best college, help them get the best careers, and find the best spouses and get into the best families? Is that what we're encouraging them to see? And then what happens is that once they're taught that they have to always go to the best places, they'll say the same thing. I want to go to the best churches. And by that time, they won't be looking at our Asian churches as the best churches anymore because of the racial script. So I think that this is not meant to be condemning. It's just meant to raise that question. What are we doing to help encourage our young adults to grow up to be the strongest Christians possible so that they become people who are in mission, who are disciples, who are serving, who care not only about what God has called them to do, but also about their people, the Asian American churches that they come out of. It would be great if we can raise a generation of Asian American young adults who will say, this is where I belong. This is what I want to do. And even if it means I have to serve harder than if I go to, City Church, I will be here. And that's what I hope will happen in the future. So let me just summarize and then open for any discussion and question. And I have another slide, but it has to do with how do we keep the young adults in our church. But I'll talk about that later. So again, five cries. When will I grow up? Can I embrace my race? Am I loved? Am I being fed at my church? And am I getting the best value? And again, these are not questions that we need to always answer by saying, let's provide all these for you. But they're questions that are double-edged. Some of them, I think our young people need to ask themselves carefully whether they're motivated properly. But others are for those of us who are invested in our immigrant churches. Can we make the environment a better environment for our young adults? So that's what I'm hoping that we'll think about as we continue our ministry and as you continue to do your ministry at this church. Okay, let me stop there. Any questions from the floor? If not, our time. Yes.
As a member and relationship between a member and the church, why the questions are like on I instead of
we. Okay. Yeah, it's mostly what I call a tool to ask the questions, because that's a lot of our young people do start with the I, and I do too. You know, because it's not because I it's not meant to say that that's only that young adults only think about themselves. I don't want to give you that impression, but it's just meant to be sort of a tool for thinking in getting into the minds of our young people. So you talk to them, that would be a way to talk. But it's not meant to suggest that, that they're selfish. Okay. It's just a tool. We could easily say, why do we as young adults have these issues? Okay. But I did that just in case you do have a one-on-one conversation with a young adult, it'd be easier. But if I go deeper in your question, I think, there is a concern about, young adults wanting to establish themselves as individuals, and that cuts against the grain of a lot of our communities that are trying to focus on being a church and being a community. And I think that's another issue. How do we find that balance? I believe that young adults need to be empowered and encouraged to stand for themselves and have strong individual standing. But can that be done effectively in a church that is so communal? And I think that is a very important larger question. Thank you. And any other thoughts or questions before we? Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I found that most American-born Chinese, they like to stick to the white,
mm-hmm.
because they speak the same
tone.
But in our church, we believe that we respect your elders,
mm-hmm.
and the elders are very important.
Mm-hmm.
But the young American-born Chinese, when they see your elders, they just like it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And in the church, how do you break that? You know, we have one this way, and then the other way, we want them to come in and join us, but we cannot speak the same tone.
Mm-hmm.
When we start to talk about my kids, they're dead. They're totally wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, do you have that tone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think. The question has to do with how do we get our young people to, I guess, to be more respectful in so that it's acceptable in our community. Okay, is that what you're trying to get at? Okay, and I don't want to use that word respect and get the wrong idea. It's not about just servility, being servile. And I have looked at Confucianism, and I think there's a lot of good stuff with the Confucian. Social arrangement that's far superior than the really individualistic world outside. But I think that there's a couple of dynamics that are going on there that are just happening to happen at the same time. And just as an aside, I have that problem too. I'm English speaking, but the young people in my church also don't respect me. in the same way you're talking about it, because whenever I preach and they don't talk to me, they just ignore me. And I can speak the same language, so this has nothing to do with accents. But I think one of the things that's happening is that like myself, when I was a teenager, and I think almost everyone who grows up as a teenager wants to be independent, wants to establish that he or she's an adult. And there's a natural tension between children and elders at that age. And that goes on almost everywhere. Almost every culture has the same thing. And in America, the American aspect of this tension is very strong, because in American society, being an individual is very important. So you fight for yourself all the time. So when you have some of that culture with our young adult, that comes into our young adult thinking, because they see their friends behaving this way, that's one of the results. So I think that's one dynamic that's really temporary, because many young people, when they get to become adults, they begin to realize that things are not as they thought it was, that they actually begin to respect their parents and appreciate what they do. Of course, it depends on whether the parents are also able to communicate with them effectively. So I, in my case, that's what happened. When I was in my teenager years, in my 20s, I always fought with my dad. And it wasn't until I was much older and had my own kids, for example, and then I started to realize that my dad wasn't such a bad guy. So it takes time. It takes time. So one is just time. This is natural. Natural processes, I guess psychologists call it individualization and integration. You know, we all try to become adults. And to that extent, I think we should encourage that. We should encourage our young people to feel like they're responsible individual adults who can make their own decisions and make their own mistakes without us tiger momming everything and trying to make everything perfect. So on the one hand, it's okay. Let them go. Let them talk like that. Let them be disrespectful for you. Maybe you can joke around back, which is what I do with my son when he acts like this. I try my best not to take it so seriously, and I just rip him back and make fun of him. So it doesn't work for everybody. I know it doesn't work for everyone. So that's one. The other thing is that there's also a need for, and this is where I agree with you, how can we teach our children the value of our Confucian kind of culture? Right, because there's a lot of stereotypes about Confucian thinking, and there's a lot of benefits too, but how do we learn to teach the appropriate way of doing things? Because Confucianism as a political ideology was very repressive, you know, foot binding, you know, all that stuff. But it could also be exactly what American society needs, because American society is so radically individualistic that people are lost. They don't feel connected anymore. So one of our contributions as Asians with a Confucian background is that we can maybe teach Americans how to learn to be a community again. And so how do we teach our children? That's where we start. I don't know the answer to that. I'm waiting to work with somebody to maybe develop curriculum. Maybe we can take some of the David C. Cook material and repackage it for Chinese people so that we do a little bit better. So again, this is a balancing act, because we have to find a way to not overly suppress, but at the same time allow what is good about our tradition to empower people. And that's what I'm dreaming for. So I don't know the answer, but I hope that we can work on it. Thank you. That's a very important question, and I hope that we can think of some solutions. Tomorrow's workshop, maybe we can do some of that. Any others before? I don't know what time I'm supposed to stop, by the way. Oh, okay. Our time is up then. Yeah. Okay, so I'll give one more question, and if you have anyone who really wants to talk about or make a suggestion, yes. I don't have too many statistics, but I have a lot of anecdotal evidence when I talk to Eugene and other English ministry pastors. What would you say the percentage is? Maybe 20, 30% come back? Yeah, less than that? Okay. I think in my church, we're doing all we can to try to keep it going higher. But the return rate is very low. And some of it is not our fault. It's not the church's fault. Because, you know, young people, they go to college, they have to move out of town, they get married and leave the Bay Area. It's too expensive to live in the Bay Area. Right? So there's all kinds of reasons that they don't come back. But we could certainly do better. And maybe we just need to do a little bit more research and think about what to do. In fact, tomorrow's workshop that I'm going to lead is, I'm trying to get you, if we're going to be in this room, it's going to be very hard. I'm trying to get all of us to think about some creative ways to help our church become a more helpful path, so that when people go to college, they will still feel comfortable about coming back. And that's one of what I'm trying to do at Canaan. It's not easy, but I'll just say one thing about this, just one thing so that you get a sense of what we're talking about. At Canaan, we have a large children's ministry. We have a medium-sized youth ministry, maybe actually small youth ministry, and we have young adults, and then we have married couples. That's our English-speaking group. There's nothing that we do to help people move from stage 1 to stage 2 to stage 3 to stage 4. So a lot of our children, when they get to 6th grade, some of their parents look at our youth ministry and say, oh, that's a tiny little youth ministry. The youth ministry doesn't have video games and all these gadgets. If you go to some of these other big churches, they have a whole game room for the kids. Okay, so our church's youth ministry doesn't have all those attractive games. So they look at this and they say, you know, I'm going to take my kids out of this church and go to this other church that has all these fun things for their kids. So we lose them. And then Those who stay in our youth ministry, they go to college. Nobody cares about them once they leave for college. No one's following up with care packages. No one's saying, we want you back. And then when they go to college and they have a good experience with campus ministries, there are other Christian ministries that just point them all different directions. And when they finish college, they don't want to come back. So the problem there is the transition ministry. We're good at doing each ministry, but we're not good at helping people move from one to the other. So one of the things I'm trying to do, which is very hard, because, you know, on top of all the people doing these ministries, you need to have certain people who have the skills to help people make the transition. I'm trying to develop a team of people who can do that. And it's not easy. But if we can, theoretically, if we can do that well, we might be able to slow down the attrition rate and maybe get more people to feel like this is really a good place to be from cradle to adulthood. So that's a work in progress right now. Okay, it's now almost 6, so I apologize for taking so much time. I apologize for making you sit down for so long. I don't like workshops where you just sit down and listen. So can you join me in prayer as we quickly pray and get to, if you want to stick around a few more minutes, I'll talk to anyone who wants to talk. We thank you, God, just for a chance to think about some of the issues that our young adults are facing, some of their questions. I thank you for the great, exciting questions that were raised. They come out of a concern and love for our young adults. And I just thank you that you have given so many people in this church who do care about the next generation, who want to see their own children do well, who want to see their own children become strong, committed believers who also care about this culture and this church community. So even as we pray together for the future, I pray that you help us to also find time to work together to build that future so that together we may be able to help our churches become just wonderful places for young adults to minister to and to be ministered at. So help us, God, as we are thinking and praying and working together and enjoying our time together at this retreat. Bless the rest of this evening, the rest of this week. Give us your will. Give us your knowledge. Just teach us, God, to be your people. I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you, Tim. It's dinner time, so we'll just go over there to dinner. And those who want to talk to Tim, you can hang around or talk to him during dinner. Thank you.